Hello and welcome to the podcast of moralapologetics.com. Our aim is to get you thinking about the moral arguments for God's existence. We think these arguments have the unique ability to both illuminate the mind and stir the heart. We're glad you're here, and we hope you enjoy the conversation. Okay, well, welcome back to the moralapologetics.com podcast. In this second episode, Dr. Baggett and I are still in his basement talking about moral apologetics, and here we take up the question of the abductive approach to the moral argument. So the first question to Dr. Baggett is, please tell us about the abductive approach to the moral argument and some of the advantages and disadvantages of that approach.
Okay. Logical arguments, right, typically tend to be divided up into either deductive or inductive, right? These things used to be defined in terms of either going from the general to the specific or vice versa, but that's kind of an old-fashioned definition. Most logic texts nowadays realize that that's not really the salient feature in either case. The salient feature of deductive arguments is that the premises purport to guarantee the conclusion, right? So all men are mortal, Socrates is man, so Socrates is mortal, right? Paradigmatic deductive argument, where the premises logically guarantee the conclusion, right? So in a deductively valid argument, that's what's going on there. There's an airtight case.
And this would be like William Lane Craig's version of the moral argument.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's true. So yeah, the preferred version of the moral argument that the great William Lane Craig gives is, right, if God doesn't exist, then objective moral values and duties don't exist, but objective moral values and duties do exist, therefore God exists, right? Beautiful, yeah. Succinct, deductive version of the argument. Now, in inductive arguments, right, generally the idea is, well, the premises don't logically guarantee the conclusion. They just make the conclusion likely to some extent. And the more likely, the better the argument, something like that. But there's another way of arguing. It's not quite a deduction or induction. It's called abduction. It's an inference to the best explanation, an inference to the best explanation. Craig himself will often employ this kind of argument in different lectures that he gives. You know, I've heard him give an abductive version of the argument for the historicity of the resurrection, for example. You know, but I prefer to use abduction when it comes to the moral argument. And this is nothing against Craig. I think that when he goes to college campuses or when he engages folks in debate, this is a wonderful way. His deductive version of the moral argument is a pithy, succinct, powerful way in which to capture some really important truths. But if you have the time, you know, to really lay this out, I do think that an abductive approach has some advantages, and I might get to those in a second. But let me just explain the basic idea behind an abductive version of the moral argument. It's not a tight deductive argument where the premises logically guarantee the conclusion, okay? It's instead something like this. You come across something in need of explanation. Maybe it's a set of data points, or it's a state of affairs, or something, right? A set of facts that you want to explain. And then you construct a list of possible explanations. So you have this list of explanation candidates, and you identify these. And then what you want to do is you want to narrow that list down to the best explanation, right? And you want to do this in a very principled sort of way. And so you employ criteria like explanatory scope, explanatory power, degree of ad hocness, and conformity to other beliefs and plausibility and the like. But basically what you're trying to do is say, okay, here are possible explanations for what is in need of explanation, and I'm whittling this list down and down and down until I get to the one best explanation. But you can't infer in any kind of deductive way to that best explanation as the true explanation, right? It's not entailed, in other words, that, well, then that's the true explanation for these things, right? I mean, you could be wrong, mm-hmm. right? But you're doing your best here, and if you've done the argument well and right, and your list of explanation candidates, you know, were good ones, and you, in a principled way, narrowed it down to the best explanation, then it seems to me that you have some real warrant to infer to that best explanation as the likely true explanation. So with respect to the moral argument, the abductive version starts with various moral phenomena, various moral facts in need of explanation. Then you provide a list of explanation candidates. So you have various moral theories, theistic ethics among them. And then you narrow the list down and you try to show both the explanatory strength, power, and so forth of the theistic ethical account. You show that it's a better explanation than all of the others. And if you can make that case, then you can ultimately infer to it as the likely true explanation of moral facts, in which case you have, in this version of the moral argument, moral evidence to suggest that indeed God exists. And so morality can function as evidence for the existence of God. Among the advantages, it seems to me, of an abductive moral argument for God's existence is that you can avoid saying unpalatable sounding things like this. You know, well, if God doesn't exist, then rape is morally okay, or something mm-hmm. like that, right? Now, in Craig's version, of course, he also wants to say, and rape is not morally okay, it would be atrocious. You know, this is one of the moral facts that he would wholeheartedly embrace. There's no question about it, right? But the argument itself still requires you to say this other thing, right? And so you're sort of imagining that God doesn't exist, and you're saying, and if God doesn't exist, right, then all of these things that otherwise, you know, seem morally horrible to us really wouldn't be so bad. And in one sense, there's something intuitive about that, but of course, in another sense, there's something utterly counterintuitive about it, right? And just put yourself into the shoes of atheists for a second, right? They think that God doesn't exist. So they think this is an atheistic world. So when they hear the antecedent of this conditional, you know, if God doesn't exist, then they're just thinking, oh, yeah, okay, in other words, in a world like this, mm-hmm. what, yeah, okay, what else? Rape is morally okay. Yeah. That's really jarring. That's really jarring. And I think a lot of atheists who don't maybe fully understand the whole, you know, force of the argument and the approach it's taking think that moral apologists are saying something, you know, very different from what they're actually saying.
It's something like, well, God doesn't exist, and it's obvious to me that rape is wrong, so that it can't possibly be related to God's existence in the way you suggest. Is that what it is?
I mean, it makes it seem as if, you know, if you come across a suffering child before you help the child before you can see that it's right to help the child, you first have to sort of stop and ask yourself the question, well, does God exist? You know, I mean, if God exists, it would be right to help the child, maybe morally obligatory. But if God doesn't, well, you know, it might not be morally obligatory or something. You see what I mean? Yeah. So there's a number of problems, it seems to me. And if only at the dialectical level, at the level of, you know, having this conversation, of building a bridge with our secular interlocutors, there are a number of problems, it seems to me, that you can just avoid by taking an abductive approach. Because the abductive approach starts with, look, all of us as human beings, or most all of us anyway, really can see and agree on this, that there are some things that are morally right, some things morally wrong, some things are morally exemplary, some things are morally hideous, right? And on this shared foundation, let's have a conversation about what best explains, you know, the various moral phenomena that we experience, from moral agency to moral freedom to moral goods to moral obligations to moral rights and so on. So it's an attempt to forge a connection, to build a bridge, to have a conversation, and it doesn't yield these unpalatable sounding implications otherwise. You know, it's like, okay, look, we agree this is a moral world, right? And not everyone will agree to that. And so if you run into a moral anti-realist or a skeptic, obviously you've got to take a different approach, right? But if I run into an atheist who says to me, look, I absolutely believe some things are right and wrong and good and evil, and I don't need God to tell me those things either, I'm like, hey, great. We've got a lot of shared ground here. Let's have a real conversation at this point now and talk about what can really explain the full range of moral phenomena and explain those things well. I'm convinced that if you have that conversation long enough, that you can really persuasively argue that a theistic worldview can explain those moral phenomena better than can, say, naturalism.
Well, it seems to be, too, a generous and charitable move to somebody disagrees with you to say, well, we both agree that something like the Holocaust is morally wrong. Let's consider your explanation for why it's wrong, and then we'll also consider mine, and we'll decide together which one better explains the fact that the Holocaust was morally wrong.
Yeah, I hope so. And I think that oftentimes what you'll find is firm conviction in the secular folks that there are some things that are right and wrong. And I don't doubt that they can have those convictions, and I don't doubt that they can have warrant for those convictions, and I don't doubt that they can have moral knowledge. I suspect that God created us all, and He created us with the capacities and the faculties to recognize these things.
Which, by the way, that's just a point in favor of the Christian view, that we have a ready explanation for why people would come to believe that certain things are absolutely wrong.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It's not a challenge to the moral apologist that atheists can have these apprehensions and recognitions. Quite to the contrary, you know, we have a very good explanation for why that would be the case. It would be very surprising if it weren't the case.
Right.
So, yeah, then you have this common ground, and you can have a conversation. And, I mean, I think there's something very dialogical about this, very, very cooperative, very incarnational. It almost reminds me of Paul at Mars Hill, you know, when he's quoting Greek poets and such. And he's kind of meeting them where they are and having a conversation and then moving that conversation in a particular direction. I really think that morality carries with it these features and implications that require robust explanation, you know? I mean, what is it about reality that makes it the case, right, that as human beings, we really ought, in a very strong sense, to do this or to do that, or not to do this or not to do that, right? C. Stephen Evans calls this the Anscombe intuition about moral obligations, that they seem to possess this kind of authority, this kind of verdict-like authority. Where would that authority come from? It seems to me that theism can provide a really powerful and effective explanation for the authority, whereas our naturalistic friends, for no fault of their own, but just in light of the limited resources at their disposal as naturalists, are going to have a considerably harder time to explain. And it's not that they can't explain anything, right? Again, I'm not embracing a deductive account that kind of has to imply that naturalistic resources are entirely useless here. No, they can explain some things. Again, remember, they have the resources of this very rich and fertile world to work with. That's going to get them some ways down the path of explanation, it seems to me, right? But on an abductive approach, the question is, what best explains the full range of moral phenomena in need of explanation? And that's where I think, ultimately, theism wins hands down.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us this week on the podcast of moralapologetics.com. Please check out our website when you get a chance. We're working on developing it into a resource for all your needs on the moral argument. Hope you enjoyed the conversation, and we'll see you next week.